Hey there, listeners. Before we begin, we have a favor to ask, and we promise it won't take up too much of your time. You know that our show is supported by some fantastic sponsors, and we'd love to hear your feedback about them. Head to podlistenersurvey.com and fill out a short anonymous survey. That's it. It won't take much time. Again, it's podlistenersurvey, podlistenersurvey.com. Thanks a bunch. Hello and welcome to the 538 Politics Podcast. I'm Galen Druk, and now that the election is over, special counsel Robert Mueller is making news again. Mueller essentially went quiet during September and October in the run-up to the midterms, and on Monday, Mueller broke his silence in a big way, saying that Trump's former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, violated his plea deal by repeatedly lying to investigators. Manafort's lawyers disagree with that assessment, and now we're all sort of waiting for Mueller to put forward his evidence that Manafort violated the deal. And that isn't even close to all we learned this week. So here with me for an update on where the Mueller investigation stands is 538 contributor Amelia Thompson-DeVoe. Hey, Amelia, how's it going?
Good, thanks. How are you, Galen?
Doing well. And actually, since Model Talk is now on hiatus, I'm thinking that maybe we can call this Mueller Talk. How about that?
I'm super into that.
Okay, so do you know how to do the intro? I'm going to say that I'm Galen, and you say that you're Amelia, and then we introduce people to Mueller Talk. Are you ready?
Okay, I got to pump myself up for this a little
bit. Get pumped up. All right,
let's do it.
Welcome to the 538 Politics Podcast. I'm Galen Druk.
And I'm Amelia Thompson-DeVoe.
And
this is Mueller Talk.
Okay, there we go. We'll have more practice in the future.
We'll get better and better. It's a strong start.
Let's begin with Manafort's plea deal falling apart, and then we can expand from there. So if Manafort did lie to investigators, what would that mean for him and the larger investigation?
The last we really saw of Paul Manafort, or the last time he was in the headlines in a big way, it was back in September, and he was pleading guilty to two counts of conspiracy, but he agreed to provide full and truthful information to federal investigators. And in exchange, if they, he cooperated with them and everything went as planned, they were going to ask the judge for a more lenient sentence. So now, if it turns out that, as Mueller's office is alleging, he did lie to federal investigators, he's still bound to the guilty plea, but Mueller doesn't have to ask for a more lenient sentence for him. So it means he's not cooperating, and there's kind of a cloud of suspicion around any of the testimony that he did give, because they're on the record saying that he lied to them, and a jury is probably not going to trust that. But it's also not great news for Manafort either.
And do we know anything about the nature of the purported lies that Manafort told to Mueller?
We don't at this point. So what happened earlier this week is that Mueller and Manafort's attorneys filed what's called a joint status report to the judge, where Mueller said basically that Manafort lied about a lot of different things and that they would file a document before he's sentenced outlining all of his, quote, crimes and lies. You know, it was a little bit of a teaser. It's really important, though, to emphasize at this point that we don't know what Manafort allegedly lied about. And Manafort, meanwhile, is contesting this. As I think you mentioned earlier, he's saying that he actually provided truthful information. He hasn't breached the plea agreement. And so basically everyone's at an impasse and they're saying, let's go forward to sentencing.
When it comes to this future filing that will lay out the quote unquote crimes and lies, I've heard a couple theories about what this document could do. Basically, if Robert Mueller wanted to, he could tell a whole detailed story about Manafort's involvement in dealings with Russia and basically put out a chunk of his report as a court filing. Does that seem likely? Does that strategically make sense?
I mean, it strategically makes sense if Mueller thinks that he has findings that are really important to get out there, that he thinks are unlikely to get out there in the form of his final report. And that would be because the final report is not made public. Whether that's likely is harder to say. Obviously, this is also a guy who kind of has like an axe over his head at all times, because the president is constantly talking about directing his attorney general to fire him. But it's definitely not the most expected thing for Mueller to do. But certainly, you know, if he did want to get information out there without going through his final report, which he doesn't control how it's disseminated or who ends up seeing it, it is one plausible avenue.
And he's had pretty detailed indictments and filings in the past, which is how we know a lot of the information that we do know about where the investigation stands.
Yeah, they've been really long, kind of like novelistic. There have been some sort of like spy novel details in his past indictments. So he's definitely capable of writing an indictment that's full of detail and tells a really compelling story of alleged wrongdoing.
Okay, so thinking about what's happening from Manafort's perspective, if this is true, why would he lie to investigators?
One obvious theory that's getting thrown around right now is that he's after a pardon. And so that's why he lied to Mueller, because he didn't, you know, he doesn't actually want to fully cooperate with him. I mean, another theory is that he's just, you know, he's like a really confident, kind of like cocky guy, and he thought he could outsmart Mueller. You know, or maybe he didn't realize how much information Mueller had, and so thought, I can say these things that Mueller can't possibly fact check, and then Mueller was able to fact check. And there's one like really far-fetched theory that has sort of been floating around there for a while, which is essentially that Manafort is afraid he'll be assassinated by the Russians if he's not safely locked up in federal prison. This seems to especially not make sense right now, because it's not clear why he would have gone for the plea deal in the first place if he was really afraid of the Russians in that way. But, you know, I mean, it's really hard to know why he would have done this. Yeah, well, you know, if you're into spy novels and you feel like the news is not exciting enough, which is something that, you know, I think all of us think constantly.
Of course.
Yeah, I mean, that last one, very far-fetched, but, you know, really hard to say why he did this. And I should say there was one more development this week, which was that the New York Times was reporting that not only, obviously, the relationship between Manafort and Mueller has deteriorated because Mueller thinks Manafort's been lying to him, but also it turns out that Manafort's attorneys kept talking to Trump's attorneys after Manafort had entered into this plea agreement, which is really unusual. It's not at all uncommon for people in investigations, people who are subjects, to share information, but those agreements usually stop when one person starts cooperating with the prosecutor, because like they're not on the same team anymore. And so the fact that Manafort, you know, kept up this relationship with Trump's attorneys is also pretty startling, and, you know, could sort of explain, at least in part, why his relationship with Mueller ended up deteriorating so much, because presumably this was not something Mueller was happy about.
Now he's going to be sentenced, it sounds like, as soon as possible. When would he get pardoned in all of this, if he would get pardoned, and what kind of sentence is he facing, considering that it sounds like the plea deal fell through?
He is facing potentially quite a long sentence, and, you know, he's almost 70, so if he's looking at a decade or more, that could be the rest of his life in prison. The president could pardon him at any time. One thing to note is that if he did get pardoned, that would get rid of the federal crimes on his record, and mean that he wouldn't serve jail time for those. It would not keep, say, the Attorney General of Virginia for going after him for, you know, tax evasion or other crimes that were committed in the state of Virginia. So it's not, you know, it doesn't seem like he would be off completely scot-free necessarily if he were pardoned. But, I mean, the issue with the pardon is that if President Trump were to pardon him now or before the investigation is over, then the pardon itself could potentially be seen as evidence of obstruction of justice, that the president was trying to interfere with an ongoing investigation by pardoning someone who is a key subject. And also, if it turns out that, you know, perhaps the president, there's some kind of evidence that the president promised a pardon to Manafort in exchange for his not cooperating with special counsel Robert Mueller, I mean, that could be problematic too. So, if the president really wanted to pardon Manafort, the smart time to do it would be after the investigation is all over.
How much of a loss is this for the Mueller investigation? They thought they had a key witness cooperating when Manafort made the plea deal. Now that's fallen through. Is this a loss?
It's a loss insofar as Manafort's not providing them information and he's not going to, you know, potentially serve as a star witness in a trial. And it's important because one of the reasons that it seemed like Manafort might have valuable information for Mueller is that he was one of the people who was present at the now infamous June 2016 Trump Tower meeting. And so, you know, insofar as he's not providing information about that or he can't testify about that, that's a loss. Other than that, I mean, he may have provided some leads that could be helpful for Mueller. And maybe he can get the information that he was going to get from Manafort another way. So, you know, it might create more work for him, but he still might be able to get what he needs from someone else.
Okay, so that's Manafort, and potentially we'll learn more when Mueller files this document detailing his purported crimes and lies. But actually, another character sort of took the spotlight as the week progressed, and that's Jerome Corsi, who people who have been following this investigation casually may not be particularly familiar with. So can you just start by introducing us to Jerome Corsi? Who is he?
Jerome Corsi is a very colorful figure who has sort of, I don't know, he's like kind of been at the edges of Trump world, or at least like he's a conspiracy theorist. He was one of the original birthers. He has a show on InfoWars, the right-wing website. He was actually, I think, on the staff of InfoWars for a little while last year. And the reason that he's caught up in Mueller's orbit is because he has links to Roger Stone. And the reason that Stone has been sort of bandied about as like as a key figure in the Mueller investigation for a while is because there are a lot of questions about the links between him and the people who hacked and leaked the emails from Democrats during the 2016 campaign.
Like Guccifer, right? Or Guccifer, or what, however you're supposed to
say that. Yeah. And so, like, Mueller has established that the people who hacked the emails were Russians. And so, right now, the challenge is trying to figure out how the stolen emails got to WikiLeaks, which distributed the emails, and whether people who are part of the Trump campaign or, you know, maybe like Roger Stone kind of in an advisory role with the Trump campaign were aware of the fact that these emails had been stolen or maybe even helped to distribute them. That's sort of the big open question right now.
And so Jerome Corsi, from what I understand, was cooperating with investigators, but then investigators claimed that he lied to them. And so they asked him to enter a plea deal acknowledging that he lied. And so this 6-page plea deal is written up by the Mueller team. And instead of Corsi signing and pleading guilty, he gave those 6 pages to the Washington Post.
Yeah, so he wasn't cooperating in the sense that Manafort was. He had just been subpoenaed. And we knew this. You know, there's been kind of a parade of people who have connections to Roger Stone who have been subpoenaed by Mueller over the past few months. So we knew that Mueller had been talking to Corsi and a number of other people. I mean, this is all sort of coming from Corsi, so take it all with a grain of salt. But, you know, first he was saying, oh, I'm going to be indicted by Mueller. Then there was reporting that he was in talks with it for a plea deal. And now he's saying that Mueller is trying to get him to plead guilty to something, you know, he may have inadvertently said something that was incorrect, but he didn't mean to. And so he's not going to sign a guilty plea saying that he lied to investigators. And yes, he did distribute this draft agreement, which is pretty extraordinary that he did that.
Now we have those 6 pages of the draft agreement, and people can go read them. They're short. But what did we learn from those 6 pages?
First of all, it's just kind of interesting to read because it's so rare to see what's happening inside the Mueller investigation before we get these polished and long and novelistic indictments. And this is a draft. It could change. You know, it's sort of hard to predict what's going to happen. But the interesting thing in this 6-page document is that essentially it seems to show Corsi and Roger Stone communicating via email during the summer of 2016 about WikiLeaks emails, and Corsi predicting a big email dump in early October, you know, which would seem to be not good for either of them. That they knew specific, you know, they knew specific things about the emails before they were released. It sort of suggests that they had a channel, not a direct channel. They were going through someone else, but they had some kind of channel to Julian Assange of WikiLeaks. And that in all of this, they were thinking in terms of how to hurt Hillary Clinton and help then candidate Trump.
And of course, Corsi says, you know, this is just political gossip. I didn't have any advanced knowledge, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, there seems like his defense basically has been, and Roger Stone has said similar things about other aspects of this, that he was, you know, he was sort of predicting and it was based on research he had done. And, you know, it was a little bit of political puffery, like he was trying to make himself seem like a better connected person than he was. Like Roger Stone, again, has said similar things. So that's his defense.
Also this week, in relation to WikiLeaks, The Guardian reported that Manafort went to visit Julian Assange of WikiLeaks three times, once in 2016, and he did so secretly. Manafort has said the reporting is false. What did you make of that reporting, and how does it fit into this whole investigation?
It was a pretty extraordinary story, and it was a little bit hard to know what to make of it, because as far as I know, I mean, I haven't been on Twitter in like the past half hour, but no U.S. outlet has confirmed this yet. So we don't know if it's true. I mean, it's one of these stories that relies a lot on anonymous or relies entirely on anonymous sources, and it's vague about the sourcing. But potentially, if it is true, this is a big deal, because one of the alleged visits to Julian Assange was in the spring of 2016, which is right around when Paul Manafort joined the Trump campaign. So that seems pretty significant if it turns out to be true.
So we will wait and see if there is any further confirmation there. But as far as this week goes, how much do we learn that's like materially new about the Mueller investigation into Russian meddling in the 2016 election? How much more serious of an investigation has this gotten for the Trump administration? I mean, does this week change things, or is it kind of still just bubbling along and hasn't much materially changed?
I think we really need to see what happens next. I mean, it's raised a lot of questions, and I think that's mostly what this week has done, because we don't know the content of what Manafort allegedly lied about, and we don't have like Jerome Corsi hasn't been charged. So there's just like a lot up in the air. I think certainly it seemed like this was going in a much tidier direction before this week. It seemed like Manafort was going to cooperate with Mueller, and that, you know, because of that, he was going to, you know, perhaps help Mueller get more information about people who then might be indicted, and that there would be indictments, and perhaps there would be a trial that Manafort would testify at. But it seemed like there was a much clearer trajectory. And now, because of all of this, it's just much more up in the air.
So that is this week, and we are not even fully through the week, so we will see what happens as the week progresses. But we also want to get some updates on what happened while Mueller was quiet over the past 2 months, and what's going on with the acting attorney general, Matthew Whitaker. But first, let me tell you that today's podcast is brought to you by WordPress. WordPress powers more than 30% of all websites, from your favorite local shops to the world's biggest companies. Join a global high-traffic network of organizations and entrepreneurs when you build your website and your business your way on WordPress.com. WordPress allows you to carve out your own corner of the web with a new custom domain name, or you can use one that you already own. You can create a site that fits you using templates and customizable themes. There's no design experience needed. Use a range of e-commerce options to promote and sell, from an easy-to-use payment button to a full-fledged online store. Plus, you can get your website up and running for just $4 a month. The time to grow your business is now. Build a website today and get 15% off any new plan purchase at wordpress.com/politics. That's wordpress.com/politics for 15% off your brand new website. Again, wordpress.com/politics. All right, let's continue our conversation. And the last time we talked about the Mueller investigation on this podcast was when Trump asked then Attorney General Jeff Sessions to resign from his post. Trump has still not nominated a replacement, which means the interim acting Attorney General Matthew Whitaker is still in place. Of course, he has not been confirmed by the Senate. He's just acting Attorney General. So, Amelia, why has Trump not nominated somebody new?
Hard to say why Trump has not nominated somebody new. You know, Democrats have been highly critical of Trump's choice, and even some Republicans, like Chuck Grassley in the Senate, have been saying, you know, you really should nominate someone else, please, right away. But he said today he's happy with Whitaker. You know, take that for what it's worth. Whitaker could, in theory, serve as acting attorney general for 210 days. Under the terms of the statute that he was appointed under. So we're talking about until about mid-June 2019. And so actually he could even stay longer than that, because if Trump nominates someone else, then Whitaker could actually continue to serve as attorney general until the Senate confirms whoever his replacement would be. So it's sort of a hard stop for 210 days for Trump to nominate someone else. But that doesn't necessarily mean that Whitaker gets the boot on day 211.
I mean, if Trump likes Whitaker, why doesn't he just nominate him? Could he not get confirmed?
It seems like it would be hard for Whitaker to get confirmed. Never say never, because we're all constantly being surprised. But Whitaker, you know, he's been openly critical of the Mueller investigation. He also, there's been a lot of reporting on kind of various sketchy business deals in his background. He doesn't seem like a great candidate to go through the Senate to be the next attorney general, I'll put it that way.
And of course, he is already right now overseeing the Mueller investigation. And so Democrats have brought legal challenges saying that it's not legal for him to serve as acting attorney general. What is their argument, and is it legally well-founded?
There are actually a couple of different legal challenges against Whitaker, and maybe the most prominent one is from the Senate Democrats. It's from three Senate Democrats, and they're basically saying that his appointment is unconstitutional because he hasn't been Senate confirmed, and that this is in violation of the Constitution's Appointments Clause, which gives the Senate the advice and consent power over high-level positions like the attorney general. Whether the case is well-founded, the senators have one high bar to clear, which is that to be able to bring this suit, they have to be able to prove that they have been harmed in some way. And I've seen some legal analysts saying that perhaps it's harder for just three senators rather than a committee or, you know, the full Senate to be able to bring this case. We'll see what happens. But at the very least, there are a lot of other kind of creative challenges to Whitaker's appointment. And it'll be interesting to see if one of them ends up being successful.
But for the time being, he's in place. And, you know, if Mueller files his report within the 210 days, presumably he would be responsible for deciding what's done with it. What does the timeline look like for the Mueller investigation? Is that a real possibility that he'll be wrapping up within 210 days and Whitaker will be in charge of deciding, you know, what happens with the report?
I think it's a definite possibility. Mueller has kind of been moving through these different phases of his investigation. And, you know, he's gotten through, we've had these two big indictments against Russians, sort of outlining what the Russians' role was in election interference. And now it seems pretty clear that Mueller is investigating this question of, well, did anyone on American soil or with connections to the Trump campaign help distribute these materials or coordinated to distribute them? So it seems like he is moving toward the end of his investigation. That being said, there has been throughout the past year, I mean, really for the past year, reporting every couple of months, sort of predicting that the Mueller investigation is wrapping up and then it doesn't wrap up. But I do think it's a definite possibility that Mueller finishes his investigation and writes his report about who he chose to indict or not indict by mid-June. And then, yeah, it's up to Whitaker what he does with the report.
Beginning January 3rd, there's going to be another element here, which is that the new Congress will begin with a new Democratic majority in the House. What kind of actions do you think are on the agenda for them in terms of protecting Mueller or getting access to any report that he may file?
Yeah. So, I mean, the Democrats have promised all of these investigations into all aspects of what, you know, they think are misconduct within the Trump administration, ethics investigations against cabinet officials, and then also sort of said they want to investigate Trump's financial background and they want to reopen the House Intelligence Committee's investigation into what happened during the 2016 election. The Democrats on their own can't offer Mueller formal protection because the Senate Republicans are continuing to block votes on a bill that has been knocking around for a while to protect Robert Mueller. But the Democrats, you know, they can do other things to try to shed light on Mueller's investigation if they think that it's being stopped. I mean, in the most dramatic situation, if Mueller got fired, they could, in theory, call him for public hearings. So that's all potentially good for Mueller if he's sort of worried about the future, the sort of stability of his job. On the other hand, Democrats could get in his way, especially if they start interviewing some of the people that he wants to interview, having them give public testimony, that kind of thing. So the Democrats do kind of have to be careful to make sure that they're not stepping on Mueller's toes. And you can also imagine that, let's say, the Mueller investigation drags on for, you know, it's still going in a few months in March or April, they might start getting impatient and trying to put more pressure on him.
And could they also ultimately get whatever report he files if it isn't made public and make it public themselves?
They can try. It's unclear exactly what would happen because under Department of Justice regulations, it's up to the Attorney General whether he wants to pass the report on to Congress. The Democrats could certainly use all the tools in their toolbox to try to get it, and I'm sure they will if it's released and they don't get to see it.
All right. Well, in wrapping up, oftentimes when we talk about the Mueller investigation, we put things in terms of smoke or fire. So a lot has happened this week, and it's been a long time since we've talked about the Mueller investigation. But where would you say that things stand right now in terms of Mueller's investigation into whether or not there was collusion? And I know that that is a vague word and not a legal definition, but collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia in meddling in the 2016 election.
This has felt like a smoky week to me, Galen. Yeah. I don't know. And I'm curious what you think, too. I mean, honestly, I feel sort of more confused now than I did back in September when Manafort was pleading guilty, because then it sort of seemed like Mueller had made this big breakthrough and he was going to have this, you know, all of this potentially important information from Manafort. And, you know, now, I mean, it's not to say that we have less evidence now than we did a few months ago that there was coordination between the Trump campaign and Russia. But it's just been a sort of confusing and unexpected week. I don't know. What do you think?
I am eager to see if Mueller chooses to expose a bunch of details during Manafort's sentencing in order to kind of share with the public what those quote-unquote lies and crimes are. And then that is potentially where things start to smolder a little more and maybe you see some flames. I have no idea. And of course, he could choose to file that document sealed and we wouldn't know what those details are. But yeah, I mean, as far as advancing from the very smoky situation that we've been discussing for over a year now, it doesn't feel like a fire has broken out Although also reading a lot of analysts on this, you begin to feel like they think that things are unraveling for Trump and that the Mueller investigation is getting close. So it's hard to know.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, there are a lot of strands here that seem like they could be very bad for Trump. But without knowing exactly how everything fits together, it's just hard to say.
All right, maybe we'll have to leave that for another Mueller talk. But anyway, let's leave it there for now. Thank you so much for joining me, Amelia.
Of course. Great to be here.
All right. I'm Galen Druk. Tony Chow is in the control room. You can get in touch by emailing us at podcasts@538.com. You can also, of course, tweet at us with any questions or comments. If you have any questions about where the investigation stands that we didn't answer, send them our way. And maybe in a future conversation with Amelia, we will answer those questions. If you're a fan of the show, leave us a rating or a review in the Apple Podcast Store. When you leave a rating, it helps our rankings, and then that helps other people discover the show. Or just tell someone about us. Thanks again for listening, and barring any emergency podcasts later this week, we will see you on Monday.